It's the Valentine's Day special here on The Shilling Show, at least in hour number one. I don't know if Ken Boyd is going to have any love or Valentine's-related topics to throw into the mix here, but we are pleased to have on the program today David Morata, who joins us regularly. You read his column Mondays in the business section of the Daily Newspaper, and he also has a new website. And David, I'm going to ask you to give us, because I didn't write it down today, what is your website?
Yeah, the website is moradaonmoney.com.
That's right.
And it's got daily blogs on wealth management.
And there's a lot of great stuff there. But along for the ride today, and perhaps the featured act, his wife, Chrisann Morata, thank you both so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and you say that, but this is a first for you. But we're really pleased that you came in. You know, David is bringing his family in. We had Megan here one time or two times who came. That's their daughter. We also had George Morata, David's father, and that was a really enjoyable time together. So I'm glad that the family gets involved in this as well, because it is important, and I think it's certainly relevant to the topic at hand today, which is money and marriage, organizing your finances in order to best love your spouse, a really wonderful way of putting it, and I think people need to look at it from that perspective. Before we jump into the subject at hand, David, I know that you do occasional workshops for the community that are open to the public, and maybe you could tell us about the upcoming NAPFA event.
Yeah, tomorrow night, Wednesday night from 5:30 to 6:30 at the Charlottesville Senior Center, we're giving a talk on the last chance to put your money where it will never be taxed again. This is the last year of the Bush tax cuts, and if you're willing to prepay the taxes on your IRA and turn it into a Roth IRA, they're having a sale this year under the Bush tax cuts. Next year, all the rates go back up, and you'll never be able to pay rates as low as you can pay this year.
Okay, so that's, again, tomorrow evening, and if people would like to go, what do they need to do?
Just attend to the Senior Center. You don't have to be a senior to come. It's open and free to the public, 5:30 to 6:30. There'll be a Q&A afterwards. And we'll basically take you through how to do a Roth IRA conversion, how to know how much to do, and how to handle it as you go through the process.
Great. I hope people will take advantage of that opportunity, because you get to hear at great length some of the details and ask some questions as well. All right. So a couple of things I would just want to reference on a personal level, which ties into this. First of all, you guys are coming up, do I understand correctly, on a 30-year anniversary?
Yes.
And so you were married in a state that allowed marriage at around 9 or 10 years old.
We got married 2 weeks after college, and it was probably the best decision. We were young and in love and didn't have money, and it's better to be in love and married if you're going to be broke anyway.
Yeah, you might as well have a little support there in being broke. But congratulations on that. It is certainly a wonderful milestone. And you also have, and I was really surprised to see this, you have an upcoming wedding in the family. Tell us who's getting married.
Our daughter Megan's getting married 2 days after she graduates.
My goodness. So following in footsteps of the parents right after college, and she's been here on the program. And so I wish all of you congratulations and best wishes on these upcoming events. Certainly very exciting for the family. So I want to start out by talking about, you know, marriage and relationships, because a lot of people look at it so romantically, and there's certainly a place for that. But you say marriage is more than eye-gazing, and I guess for people who are just getting ready to embark, or maybe to do it a second or even a third time, and there are people out there, what do we want to know about that? What is the more than the eye-gazing and the romance part?
Well, it's interesting. Finances tend to be a taboo subject in most families, and so when two people get married, they know almost nothing about their finances. Parents play finances very close to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to have two parents who told me everything about their finances. At 4 years old, I knew what my father made. I knew what our mortgage was. My mom told me exactly how much it took to run a family and a budget. And I didn't realize that that wasn't normal. So I sort of entered the marriage world, at least knowing, having some general direction on finances. But then finances are just your shared goals. And so it's your shared love and goals and dreams. And money is just a placeholder for the important values in life. And how you spend your time and your money reflect what you love and what you value. And there's nothing more romantic than talking about your shared goals, your dreams, what you love, what you value, and what you want to accomplish with your life.
It's very interesting that you put it that way. And I remember before Joan and I got married, we were going through some premarital classes that they had. And one of the things, amidst all of the other things they wanted you to talk about, was money and finances. And I don't think, it was a long time ago, but I don't think it was particularly hard for us to talk about this, although we came from some pretty different backgrounds as far as the way our parents handled money. But I do think that it was an important and a valuable conversation. You know, I would imagine that most people getting married today never have that conversation, or if they do, it's very, very brief.
That's one of the things we encourage young couples to talk about is put together a budget. Because mm-hmm. when you're putting together a budget, it's not just numbers on a page. It's what are our life's goals? What are mm-hmm. we saving for? What kind of lifestyle do we want to build together? And you have expectations. You have things that you're expecting to do with the money, and it's good to make sure you know what each other are thinking.
Well, it is, but it's really hard. I guess I want to ask you, David, I mean, from your perspective, and you worked with an awful lot of people over the years, and I'm sure people who are getting married as well as people who've been married once or more times, you know, what is the difficulty? Why are people so uptight about money? What does that really represent?
Yeah, and again, I think it's people fight about money because of their difference in values. So we see a fair number of clients and couples and that we're trying to help who are in credit card debt. And I'm amazed they're in credit card debt, but they have much deeper issues. So the wives are trying to hide purchases under grocery spending by buying extra stuff at Walmart. Mm-hmm. And the husbands are spending cash and then they're lying about where it's actually been spent. And the reason is because they disagree with each other about what's important in life. And so they're shortchanging each other's values and goals and dreams. And so that's sort of a death spiral, because you really can't, if you don't have shared goals and values and dreams, and you're not willing to be honest about the money or in the way you spend your time and the way you spend your effort, that's just not a good sign for a healthy relationship.
So if you're stepping into this whole thing, and let's just say that somebody was having the conversation, they said, well, let's step back and let's have the conversation about our values and our goals and our dreams. And they found out that their values were pretty different. And I would imagine that's the case in at least several significant areas. When people get married, they may have very different values. I mean, what do you do? Do you say we're not going to get married, or do you try to find some common ground on values that we can pursue? Because that would seem to be a real blockbuster if that was the case.
Yeah, we teach a pre-marriage class at our church on finances, yeah. And we have 7 financial vows that we think that couples need to make to each other. And obviously, if you can't make the vows, you can't be married. And they really just all stem from the marital vow of trying to put your spouse as more important than all those other things that might be different, and finding a way to honor your spouse and really spend the money in ways that validate who each other is and who each other's calling is in life. And so when we find couples who are in financial trouble, we won't even help them unless they're willing to go through what the 7 financial vows are and be willing to agree to those. Because it's very difficult to take couples in financial trouble and get them out of financial trouble. And it takes a Herculean effort, and it takes a radical change of heart and mind in order to do that, because everything's been built up because of the heart and mind the way it is one way, and it has to get changed to another way. And at the end of that process, you find not only are the couples in better financial straits, but they also have better marriages because they're talking about things they refused to talk about before.
Yeah, and we're going to get to those 7 vows after the break. We're talking with David and Chris Onmorata. Money and Marriage Today, Organizing Your Finances in Order to Best Love Your Spouse. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments or questions for our guests, we would love to hear from you. And this is a very hot button topic. So I'll say, if you want to call in and use a different name, it's okay. Sometimes people are in trouble and they're concerned that they don't want anybody recognizing them. So you're welcome to call in using a pseudonym today. So there's one thing, there was a term that you used in our communication before the show that I thought was really interesting, because I never heard it put this way before. And you talked about looking at marriage as a business merger. And most people wouldn't consider, or at least a lot of people wouldn't consider, their personal financial life as a business. But you say this is a bigger business merger, or maybe more important than most corporate mergers.
Well, if you think about how you're running, how much money is running through a family, there ought to be an accounting for it. And mm-hmm. one of the vows we suggest is just that you have an open accounting for where the money is being spent.
Yeah.
And you talk about that like you would any other corporation. You have to feed your family, you have to save for retirement, and you have to, you know, buy clothing and food. And all of that is really running a family. In olden days, you know, every major marriage was a family, a merger of 2 families, 2 estates, 2 dynasties, mm-hmm. and they treated it as such. And we are all richer than the kings of old. We all have bigger lifestyles and bigger budgets than any king from the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think it makes sense to act like you're going to be handling it as a business.
And so as we look at all of this, we say financial troubles can be a major source of breakups. I mean, that's played out. But on the other hand, is there proven research that would say financial planning in advance and the discussions that we're going to be covering after the break are something that could ensure the longevity and happiness in a marriage? Have people looked at these discussions and said, hey, these are valuable because people who go through this or talk about this have more successful marriages?
Well, it turns out that since we know that being in financial straits leads to a much higher incident of divorce, having a financial cushion, a financial margin, if you will, in your mm-hmm. life, smooths over all of the troubles that that come from debt and deficit in a family. So yes, at least if you have the money and the margin and you keep your spending under what your income is, at least you can solve all the problems that money can solve.
So, which is not every problem.
Right, which is not every problem, but it's at least many of the problems in marriage that will compound into other problems in marriage. And so just living below your means will give you a financial peace of mind. And I've found that both Chrisanne and I tend to be better spouses when we're not worried by all of the worries that you can have in life. We just, you know, it allows you to be more relaxed.
And we found with a budget, a lot of people go, oh, I never want to do a budget. But mm-hmm. without a budget, you fight over the first dollar spent. But if you have a budget, you don't fight until a dollar goes over budget.
So that way it sets up a little smooth sailing, it sounds like, in advance if you can agree, hey, here's where we're going. And then if you hit the budget, then you can have that discussion. But without it, as you're saying, that could really lead to some interesting discussions, and perhaps they'll be a little bit rocky. 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. We're heading to the news and weather at the bottom of the hour, and when The Shilling Show returns with David and Chrisanne Morata, the topic money and marriage, we're going to get into the 7 financial vows for marriage. I'd like to make a little checklist, each of you listening, and see if you have talked about these and done these things, made these vows one way or another. That's all when The Shilling Show returns after this, so stay with us.
The Shilling Show is on the air.
News Radio 1070 WINA.
The phone number here on The Shilling Show, the Valentine's Day edition. Hour number one, we are focusing on money and marriage. Here in studio with us, Chrisanne Morata and David Morata, husband and wife, preparing to celebrate 30-year anniversary and a wedding in the family as their daughter Megan, who's been a guest here on the program as well, will be getting married soon. So it's a great day on Valentine's Day to be talking about this subject that a lot of people are, this has got to be one of the most difficult things for a lot of people, money, talking about money. And so you had referenced 7 financial vows for marriage. And these are great. And just to see it laid out, it doesn't look so intimidating. If you just look at the topic, it looks intimidating. But if you look at the actual list here, it's like, okay, I can handle this. This looks manageable. Rule number one, vow number one, start now. When is now?
Now.
Is now even before you get married, if you happen to have the conversation, which you hopefully would, or is it the day you get married? I mean, what is really now, and when can you start planning, even if your finances happen to be separate?
Well, we encourage engaged couples to talk about money and their expectations for money, you know, as early in their relationship. But the mistake a lot of people make is to say, well, after I do X, Y, Z, then mm-hmm. I'll get my finances in order. After I get that car, then I'll get them in order. And that's the mistake. You want to postpone the spending, organize your saving and your budget, and then work up to that big purchase like a car.
Yeah, I mean, the finances are such that every 7 years you delay getting your act together, you cut in half what you'll have in retirement.
Well, that's very significant. And again, unless people have a good background in economics and finance, they don't understand that. They don't understand the power of compounding and the 7-year rule and so forth. And so people need to be told that, but they also need to believe it when they hear it, because then we go, oh, yeah, right. You know.
Yeah, and it's absolutely true. When we see families who started young on the right financial track, you know, very, very small differences can make a very huge effect. That's the whole principle of wealth management. And in fact, the example we use in the pre-marriage class is if you have a $4.95 latte,
mm-hmm.
and if you buy just one of those at age 20, the difference between buying that latte and putting that into your retirement account is about $475 in your retirement account. So it has a 100-fold effect between 20 and age 65. If you buy one of those every single day between age 20 and 65, it's the difference between having that daily latte for $4.95 or having $495,000 in your retirement. So it's a $500,000 decision. Those very small effects compounding over time at market rates of return produce a 100,000-fold effect if it's a daily item that you're buying.
You know, it's interesting, and it's one reason why I don't walk around with a lot of cash in my pocket. I've never been inclined to make those sorts of purchases, but, you know, hearing it put so bluntly and in such stark terms, I'm especially disinclined to make those sorts of purchases because that really adds up to a lot of money. But people, again, I think they have a hard time. We're so impulsive. We're driving down the street. Hey, I feel like a latte. I'm going to stop over there and pick one up. Ah, it's only pocket change. I got a few bucks in my pocket. What is that going to matter?
That's exactly right. And that's why the second marital vow is budget as a team, because mm-hmm. budgeting has the same effect as when you're trying to diet and calorie count. The fact that you have to write it down means that you will eat less. The fact that you have to write it down means you'll mm-hmm. spend less.
You know, the other thing, when you talk about budgeting as a team, and Lois, hang on, we'll get to you in just a moment. You talk about budgeting as a team, and I think it's a trend these days, and it was even talked about, you know, 20 years ago when we got married. It was suggested to us, now you keep your own checkbook, so you have like a his, mine, and ours situation. We didn't do that. That's not how my parents did, and I had no intention of going into a marriage like that. But I would imagine that there are a number of people today who could say, how are we going to budget as a team when we each have our own checkbooks and a separate account that's ours? Is that possible? And is that how most people are going into marriage today?
Well, we've known people that have made that work. I mm-hmm. think it's more difficult than just throwing it all together and having one agreed plan. But one of the things we recommend is in your budget, you have a category for his frivolous and her frivolous. It's a very small piece of the pie, but yeah. then he can spend something, like if he wants to buy comic books, mm-hmm. then there's no questions asked as long as he stays within that piece of the pie and she keeps in with her frivolous.
And we recommend the frivolous category be about a 0.5% for each spouse. So if 1% of your budget is to frivolous and you split that in half, then you can pretty much save up to buy things that you want to buy, but it's not going to have a huge impact on your budget because it's only a total of 1%.
Yeah, and I think that keeps things manageable. Let's go to the phones because the phone lines are absolutely full. Let's say hello to Mike on line 3. Lois and Greg will get to you in just a moment. Mike, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David and Chris on Murata. Go right ahead.
Hey, Rob, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm just listening and got engaged in the conversation. And I'm actually engaged myself, and my fiance has helped me tremendously in figuring out how to save money. The key for me, I would say, is the lunches and the dinner outs have saved me a lot of money. But something I'd kind of like to recommend for people, and you can tell me what you think, is I know a lot of times people have a hard time keeping track of what they spend and how they save. And something I've done that really helps is, and we'll just use a made-up number here, but let's say you had $1,000 in your checking, and after each pay period, you see where that goes, and you can then, it's easier then to track how much you spend. So if you spend $600 and your paycheck comes in and it's $1,000, you can see that you've saved $400, and then you can shift that towards your savings. But for me, having a number to set on to always keep that checking is an easy way for me to see what I saved and if I didn't save, and a way to motivate myself. And I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, Mike, thank you very much. And when you said you got engaged during the conversation, I thought you actually proposed to somebody, but actually he's already engaged. Good question. Let's get a comment from our panel here.
Yeah, I think Mike's got a great idea, and that is you look at what's at the end of each paycheck left over, and you transfer that into savings. We actually recommend a slightly easier method, and Mike, you might want to consider this. This is a way to become an automatic millionaire. You put your $1,000 paycheck into your investment account, like at Schwab or TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or something like that, and then you get an automatic monthly transfer each month of the $600 that you want to spend into your checking account, and you leave the $400 behind in your investment account. This allows you to separate what you earn from what you want to spend, and then the $400 by default is in your account, and you don't need to transfer it each month. If any month you run over and $600 isn't enough, you transfer some more money down from that account. You've always got it there. It's still your money. But the whole mindset of it's in my investment account, then as it sits there, then you start investing that investment account.
And it makes it a little harder to grab. If it's just in a regular checking account, it's like, ah, oh, I could fudge on this a little bit.
Yeah, I can transfer $300 back and spend that and buy that $100 thing I've been lusting after. And so it just keeps you from doing that a little bit more, and it allows you to save more.
Yeah, it's like being on a diet and having pizza in the fridge.
And that's actually the fourth vow we talk about is pay yourself first. It's that idea that you put it into savings first and then transfer out what you need.
Yeah, that's the default. And I think as you look at all of this, how you structure it, even though a lot of times it's semantic, it's very important in how your mind perceives it. That leaves a line open at 977-1070. Greg, hold on. Let's say hello to Lois. And Lois, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with the Marottas.
Hi, thanks, Rob, and hi, Mr. and Mrs. Marotta. My question is about funding your Roth or traditional IRA, and the question is, if you know you'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire, you're supposed to put it in the Roth, I guess it is, but what if you're great with investing, and so you're going to, like, double your money and triple your money, so you see what I mean, or, like, make it increase a lot, then wouldn't it be better to have put it into the Roth instead of the traditional?
Yeah, Lois, you've got a great question, and a Roth is appropriate for almost everyone. We're going to talk about tomorrow night at the Senior Center, talk about who it might not be appropriate for. There's only a couple of cases where it's not appropriate, where you know you have a high salary now, and you know you're about to have a low salary. And sometimes there's gap years, so if you retire at age 65, even if you have a high IRA, you don't have to start taking required minimum distributions until 70. You may have 5 years in there in which you have no income, and those are good years to do a Roth conversion. So if you're certain that your tax bracket is going to be lower in the future, it's better to put it in the traditional IRA, get the tax deduction now, and take it out later when you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. But I will tell you, a lot of people who thought they were going to be in a lower tax bracket actually found themselves in a higher tax bracket for two reasons. One, the government keeps moving the tax brackets up, and inflation keeps moving the tax brackets up, and you keep earning more money, and then you have a big IRA, and when you take your IRA out and you add your IRA and your pension and Social Security, you could find yourself in just as high or even higher a tax bracket when you're in retirement as you are when you're working. So we recommend if you're young your income is going to be increasing in the future that you go ahead and fund your Roth first. If you're approaching retirement and you're at the height of your career, funding the Roth might not be the best idea. But if you're in a high enough tax bracket or you have a high enough IRA that your required minimum distributions are going to supplement your income up even higher than it is now, then a Roth IRA conversion might even be correct. And even if the Roth pushes you into a higher tax bracket, so long as the Roth goes up by enough, it's worth keeping. Because if you fund the Roth with $10,000, and you're right, it doubles to $20,000, well, you'd have to have a 50% tax rate in order for that not to be worthwhile, because it's already doubled in a tax-free environment, and you only had to pay tax on the $10,000. So Roths are very complex decisions, and it depends on your age, your income, your future income, and what the tax rates are liable to do going forward.
Lois, thanks so much for the call. It's always good to hear from you. Let's go right now to a break. When the Shilling Show returns, we'll get to Greg, and there's also a line open for you. If you have comments or questions for our guests, David and Chris on Marotta, we'd love to hear from you. It's 977-1070. Shilling Show back after this.
It's the Shilling Show with Rob Shilling. Only on WINA.
Nine seven seven 1070 is the phone number. We have a line open for you right now if you have comments or questions. As David and Chris on Marotta are with us, money and marriage is the topic today. And the Most Patient Man of the Hour award goes to Greg, who's been sitting with us for a long time waiting to get on the air. And Greg, thanks so much for joining us today on the Shilling Show. You're on with David and Chris on.
Hey, how are you all today?
Doing well, Greg. Great to hear from you.
I just have a few comments. For one thing, you know, I've got mostly old vehicles that get terrible gas mileage, and everybody says, go out and buy a new car and get better mileage. Well, I'm in construction and stonework, and the way I look at it, if my car breaks down, it's paid for, and I don't have payments there if I don't have any employment. And the other thing is, you know, if you marry somebody and they're a spender, and you're a saver or one that doesn't like to spend, there's always going to be trouble because some people just have to consume. And, you know, you need to look at that before you think about getting serious about marriage. My wife and I don't even do anything on Valentine's Day for each other at all whatsoever or Christmas. We don't. But we do like to eat out. So I figure you spend $100 a week eating out. That's $5,200 a year. And I do like to get coffee and newspaper every day. That's $4 a day. That's $1,200. So you're looking at $7,200 a year just in eating out and buying a newspaper and coffee. And then the fuel I burn. So between the fuel and all that, you're talking $14,000 a year. So that's kind of a serious issue. But it's important to me to eat out and have that coffee and newspaper, and I look at that as a priority, and if times get hard, I just don't do it, and I'm going to sign off and let y'all comment.
Okay, I know that our guests probably have a lot to say about all of that, and I like eating out too. We probably go out as a family once a week, more for family than anything else, for family time, but I do enjoy it. But let me tell you, we're not eating at the Black Tie Affair. We're eating at the local buffet, and I think we enjoy it every bit as much. David?
Yeah, I think more families eat out today than probably ever before. The choices are better, the prices are lower than they used to be, and eating out is not as much as of a budget buster as it used to be. But I would say, you know, I would say to Greg and his wife that if eating out fits within your slice of the budget, for some people eating out is an important slice of the budget. Chrisanne and I eat out a lot, and it fits within our slice of the budget. We eat out, invite other people, and pay for them. So that's within our slice of the budget too. And so long as it fits within the slice of the budget, you know, Greg and his wife could eat out every single day, and then they could drive a truck that isn't as valuable. For someone else, driving that truck that's brand new and pristine is more valuable, and they'll eat at home. And those are exactly the decisions you have to make when you're setting up a budget is, what do you value most? What you get the most bang for the buck in terms of your lifestyle and values?
One of the things we found, too, is after we made that plan and that budget, is we had a dollar limit where we wouldn't spend it, even if it was within the budget.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't spend it without talking to each other first. So when we were first married, that was $50 because that was a week's worth of groceries.
A lot of money back then.
It was.
Yeah.
So even if it was in the budget, we'd say, well, that's a week's worth of groceries. I'm not going to spend that until I talk to Dave.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to do it. And again, it just builds communication, even if the understanding is, hey, the other person's not going to veto it unless it was something really crazy. To just have the conversation, I think, would open up a lot of communication that would be very helpful. We're almost out of time, and I don't want to let a couple of these things go. One of them is setting rules for credit. And this is where so many people get in trouble because the credit card, hey, unless you're disciplined, you can get into a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, if you have one person who's a spender and they have a credit card, which is basically a bottomless ability to spend, you're going to run into trouble. So, and I think the rule for credit that we recommend is that you do not have any credit except that both parties agree.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that means no credit at all. We're going to the cash in the envelopes until we get our finances under order. And we recommend that when you've got two people. They both have to agree before they will go to credit. The second thing you might have is you can use the credit card for gasoline and groceries. And those are the only two uses of the credit card because those are just regular expenses that are much more convenient to be done that way and rather than carrying around a lot of cash. And for other people, credit cards are fine because they pay them off and they're within all their budget slices and they're doing just fine.
Well, that would be the other rule is that you pay it off every month,
no matter,
you don't carry a balance.
Yeah, because you can get in really deep trouble with the credit card balances. And, you know, Joan and I have discipline here. We basically use credit card for everything that we can. We have one of the cashback cards. We get a check every once in a while for a couple $100. And we never have carried a balance, and we don't ever plan to. And that works okay for us, but it's certainly not recommended for everybody.
No, and if you do that, then you can download all your transactions and put them automatically into Quicken or another budget program. And that has a great effect because then you can at least see where all of your money went without having to, when we were first married, write it all in a notebook and then review it once a month.
All righty, that's going to wrap up our time together today. I'm going to let you say rule number 7 really quickly in our last 30 seconds together so we can at least say we got through the list.
Yeah, and rule number 7 is to be part of the solution. You need to both be involved. You can't have an absentee manager. You need to review it together and work on it together periodically, once a month, once a quarter, once a year.
All right. Not so bad at all, was it, Chrisanne? We hope you'll come back and join us again. And David Murata, as always, thank you for joining us. People can visit him online at Murata on Money. Real quick, if people want to attend your event tomorrow.
Yeah, it is tomorrow night, 5:30 to 6:30 at the Senior Center. And it is on Roth conversions, how to put your money where it will never be taxed again.
Free and open to the public. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We're heading right now to news at the top of the hour and weather update. When the Shilling Show returns, we'll have Cody Peters and Cindy Burkett here from ACRAWL and also Supervisor Ken Boyd. Much more of the Shilling Show on the way. Stay tuned.